Right now, another tragedy in the Florida storms. This past December, 18 whooping cranes, an endangered species and the tallest bird in North America, successfully migrated from a wildlife refuge in Wisconsin to new wintering grounds in Florida. The migration was part of a sophisticated effort by biologists and volunteers to make sure birds born in captivity can establish that most important vacation habit, migrating south for the winter. It was the first time in 6 years that every single bird in the flock survived the migratory journey. But then last Friday, disaster struck when 17 of the 18 cranes were killed in severe storms that ravaged central Florida. Joining us now to talk about what happened to the birds is Marianne Wellington, an aviculturalist at the International Crane Foundation and a chick-rearing specialist. She joins us from the Crystal River Refuge in Florida. Thanks very much for being with us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
You were monitoring the cranes at their refuge in Florida when the storms hit, right?
I was actually returning from meetings, WESET meetings in Louisiana, and going to hook up with my coworkers. She already checked the birds on Thursday afternoon, and everything was good. And I showed up, and we started working on another project with the cranes.
And what happened to them? Do we know?
The preliminary necropsy results indicate that the birds did aspirate water and drowned.
Yeah. Just drowned by the storm surge, or?
That we're still trying to piece together.
Now, what were you looking for when you monitor cranes? How are they monitored?
Basically, we head out there and we check to see that we have the 18 birds, and then we don our crane costumes and we head out and double check that they have food, that they have fresh water, because they are in a saltwater marsh. And then we just hang out with them for a little bit to make sure physically everything's okay with them and there's no major social problems with them.
You don crane costumes?
Yes. We try very, very hard to make sure that these birds are not interested in people, and so we wear a costume that covers our human features and hopefully provides the proper imprinting cues for the birds so that when they are interacting with us, they see a puppet head that looks like a crane head. It has, you know, the black mustache, the yellow eyes, the red cap, and we're wearing, you know, a white outfit because the whooping cranes are white.
Mm-hmm. They're the tallest birds in North America, but still shorter than most biologists.
Yes, usually, yes.
Okay, so anyway, they keep their fear of humans this way.
That's our general hope, yes, that they will not be interested in hanging out with humans.
And as disturbing as this news is from Florida in this attempt to establish a second home for the whooping cranes, as I understand it, the situation in Texas, the established home for these cranes, is much better.
Yes, they've actually had a very good year this year, and I believe they have about 237 birds in that flock.
And how many birds in a flock do you need before the population is considered healthy?
That's a good question. What the recovery team has come up with is that we would like to have 25 breeding pairs. So most likely we're going to have around 75 to 100, probably even more than that. Actually, I can't even count. Breeding pairs, 25 breeding pairs is 50 birds. Yeah, so we would need to have around 100, 125 or more.
And after this setback, how long do you project it's going to be now before you can get there?
Every year is different, you know. Hopefully, if we can get an average of 20 birds out there, it's going to be a rather short time because right now we're looking at 64 birds in the population. So hopefully within the next 4 or 5 years, we'll be at the right situation.
And don't you fear, though, that another series of strong thunderstorms and tornadoes, this could happen again?
Well, we can't predict natural disasters, so that's why the recovery team is looking at using various release methods, and there's already a direct autumn release project in the works. So one of the good sides of this is, although it sounds exceedingly tragic that we've lost 17 of the chicks,
mm-hmm.
We still have 4 birds that were released using this direct autumn release method, and it's nice that we don't have all our eggs in one basket, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Marianne Wellington, thanks very much. We wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
Marianne Wellington joined us from Crystal River, Florida. She's an aviculturalist at the International Crane Foundation. The death of the birds was a heartbreak for the people that actually helped the flock down to Florida. Joining us now is Joe Duff, lead pilot and co-founder of Operation Migration, a nonprofit organization that works to reestablish migratory routes for whooping cranes. And he's with us from Port Perry in Ontario. Good to have you with us today.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
And tell us how this works. How do you get the cranes to follow you south?
Well, it's a simple process, and it's based on imprinting. You know, the birds are initially raised at the Patuxent Wildlife Research Center in Maryland. And really, for a bird, a precocial bird like a whooping crane, the first thing it sees, the first thing that nurtures it, it imprints on. And we just make sure that's us as opposed to another whooping crane.
And do you wear crane costumes like the aviculturalists do?
Yeah, it's a big bag that's designed to disguise the human form, covers us from head to foot and even our hands, and we carry a hand puppet. We also carry a digital recorder that broadcasts a brood call or from adult.
What does that sound like?
Well, it's called a crane purr, and it basically means to the bird, I'm here, everything's okay, you're okay. It's what the parent would issue to the chick.
And once they're then imprinted on you, I guess, what do you do with them next?
Well, then when the birds are around 47 days of age, they're shipped from Patuxent in Maryland up to the Nisseta National Wildlife Refuge in Wisconsin. And we do that in three separate shipments, and we have three separate cohorts. We train those birds every day that the weather allows. With the aircraft to get them conditioned to the sight and sound of it and flying with it. And then as they progress over the course of the summer and are able to fly, we start mixing those three cohorts into one cohesive flock. And then when their dominant structure is all established and they'll follow the aircraft in order, then we start on a migration. The migration starts sometime in early October.
And do they fly in a V pattern like geese?
Well, they do. Whooping cranes are soaring birds. They normally thermal like a hawk or an eagle, and they'll fly for hours that way without expending much energy. Now, of course, we can't fly that way. So when we fly through the air, our aircraft create a wake, much like a boat does, and the birds learn to fly on that vortice. So, yes, there's the lead bird is usually about 4 or 5 inches from the wingtip.
And like the aviculturalists in Florida, you wear these costumes when they're imprinting on you, but what about the aircraft? Are they made to look like cranes, too?
No, the aircraft just look like normal aircraft. They're modified substantially to fly slow enough, but the pilots are costumed. Isolation rearing means removing the bird from any human environments and giving it as natural an experience as possible. You know, by the time we arrive in Florida, our birds have never heard a human voice. They've never been close to an uncostumed person. They've never been close to an automobile or a pop can or anything human. It's all isolation, as much isolation as we can give them. Of course, the only exception to that is the ultralight. Now, that some people believe it's a problem that birds will follow ultralights, but our birds are imprinted on our aircraft, and they recognize it as they would their mother. And it's specific. It's just that one aircraft they recognize. If, for instance, we were to take the propeller off and change it to a different propeller, the aircraft would make a different sound. The birds would not follow it.
Uh-huh. So there's no danger of them being lured astray by just a passing ultralight aircraft.
Exactly. And on top of that, once they're over their first year, once they become subadults, they're kind of like your kids, you know, or your 18-year-old kid won't pay attention to you either. So they won't follow us. So there's no danger of that.
It sounds like you get attached to these birds. I mean, you've been with them quite a bit.
Well, of course, our team has been with them from April and May when they hatch all the way through the summer every day, right through to December when we finally get them to Florida. So you do become attached despite your best efforts. This is a scientific experiment, you see, and we're trying to make these birds as wild as possible. We assign them numbers. We don't give them nicknames to leave the impression that they are not pets. And to try to impress upon the public that these birds need their space and please don't approach them and please don't try to feed them. So despite that detachment, we still, you know, you still pick your favorites. There's no question. So it's a huge loss. It's a loss financially. It's a loss emotionally. And it's going to be a loss to the population long term.
Yet the effort to establish, as we heard earlier from Marianne Wellington, you don't want all your eggs in one basket, one migratory basket, or one refuge for these birds.
Exactly. You see, the only naturally occurring population was down to 15 birds in the 1940s. They migrate from northern Canada all the way to Texas. So one avian disease, one chemical spill, or one storm like we've just experienced could wipe out that entire flock. And then you've lost whooping cranes forever. 60-million-year-old species gone. So the recovery team want to establish additional populations. The problem, of course, is that whooping cranes, like a lot of birds, learn the migration route by following their parent. There's no parent generation in the east, so that's where we come in.
And you're going to be back at it next year?
Of course. You know, it's too important to be stopped by one event like this. This event, although tragic, just highlights how tenuous their existence is and how important it is to establish more and more flocks.
Joe Duff, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Joe Duff, lead pilot and co-founder of Operation Migration, a nonprofit organization that works to reestablish migratory routes for whooping cranes. And he joined us today from Port Perry, Ontario, in Canada.